evening, good afternoon, good morning, or whenever you happen to be listening to this. Welcome to the Film Realist Podcast, the film and TV podcast from a complete nobody. That is hopefully for somebody. My name is Kyle Naranya, and welcome to episode 215. And this is a big episode. This is going to be a review of Spider-Man Brand New Day. And while I had him on for Dexter, I would say his second love. His main one is there's the voice of Cade Onder. Cade, welcome back.
Thank you. I think the first time you ever had me on was for No Way Home.
Oh, that's right. We were talking More Fun Stuff Edition. That's right.
Yeah.
The people talk about how many episodes the podcast manages to have with its crew of one. And I had forgotten I did an episode for that.
Yeah.
Because it was such a weird experience. Sony was obviously trying to get to $2 billion because that was the goal of that
and
extra release. And they didn't. But you know what? I am surprised. I am surprised No Way Home didn't come out in like May just because. Like if Morbius can get released twice,
Can
No Way Home get a third release? I think it could have. Brand New Day, we're going to have a brief non-spoiler discussion, and then we'll get into the nitty-gritty with full spoilers. And then we're going to talk about our favorite Spider-Man films, because you always have to have a discussion as to what is the best. That's just sort of how it works with this stuff. So we're going to do that anyways. Time codes will be listed in the description should you feel the need to hop around. If you saw it opening weekend, you're probably just diving into full spoilers. And I'm not judging. If you didn't go and see it, maybe you're not one of the $800 million that it's looking like this is going to get an opening weekend. A little behind the scenes. We're recording this actually on Thursday before opening weekend. So none of those numbers are in yet. So it'll be a surprise to me as well as Cade as to how well this does. So you've been warned. We're going into non-spoilers. So I hope you join us for a brief discussion on Spider-Man Brand New Day.
What is happening to me?
Did you miss me, Spidey?
All right, Cade, there we have to address, I guess, the man spider in the room, and that's not a spoiler for those who are worried about it. Spider-Man is one of those characters where your progression with him in real time, or sort of getting the option that you had that I didn't have, and consuming it all at once, seemingly as it's come out. But this has been what's so funny to me about watching this movie. And then also obviously knowing so much about the behind the scenes is the home trilogy was every 3 years on the dot, right? We knew when they were coming out. And then to have this gap of 5 years, there obviously was a lot of anticipation going into this. And that can be really hard for Marvel films, but I want to lay my cards on the table. I know we both saw this on the Wednesday, the fan screenings or whatever the heck they're calling them. But I've actually already seen the film twice, so I feel even more confident with how I feel about the film. But why don't you give your general feelings on Spider-Man Brand New Day?
Yeah, I really liked it. It's the best, in my opinion, of the Tom Holland movies. I think it's the most focused. Well,
we'll get into that.
Yeah, certainly has like the most like. We know what we want Peter Parker to be, you know, like we know what this Spider-Man is. I feel like the last three movies, and they've kind of said it now at this point where they're like, yeah, we were like doing an origin story across three movies. And I'm like, that was weird. Why'd you do that?
I think that's a cop out answer. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Because it's retroactive.
So I'm one of those people. I don't care what Kevin has said. Tom Holland is not the little boy in Iron Man 2.
No, I completely agree with that. Yeah.
It's not that guy.
No, it's some George Lucas. No, I completely agree. But yeah, I think it's like they've found who Peter Parker is, which thank God they landed on this, because I think it's exactly what I wanted Peter Parker to be in this universe. It is the most, I think, well-realized version of living in the Marvel universe there's ever been, in the sense of like, there's other people, you know, you can just go see this character, whoever that is, and you can talk to them, have a conversation, and they'll drop references about things they've been doing, as opposed to like the crossover being something grand and significant. It's lived in, and I really like that. And I just think it tells a really good, emotionally focused story, and it's the most miserable Peter Parker's probably ever been on screen in history. And I really love that. It's it's exactly what I wanted in terms of this iteration of Peter Parker. There's some aspects of it that we'll probably have to wait till spoilers to get into, that kind of feel uneven, but as a big picture, I was very satisfied. I cried in the opening of the movie because I was like, oh my God, this is exactly what I've been waiting for so long. It just made me so happy. I was like, they just get it. Thank God. And last thing, web swinging. He's actually doing Spider-Man in New York. Thank God.
I think that's the best place to start. I think with my feelings, I have been, and this was a completely biased opinion going into the MCU version of Spider-Man, because I loved me Andrew Garfield. He's in some not great movies.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. And the changeover was so abrupt and so quick. 2 years is not a long time in movie making. And the fact that Spider-Man, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, 2014, he shows up in Civil War. We've got a brand new Spider-Man. That there was an adjustment period to me where I felt like I had to fight for the previous Spider-Man.
Sure. Yeah.
And you brought up the retroactive origin story nonsense, which is, it's nonsense. Mm-hmm. And I think their understanding of Peter Parker seemed to be so hyper-specific. And it's interesting because where we are with this movie, and this is not a criticism, some may think it is, but what Spider-Man Brand New Day is above everything else, it is a vast collection of the best aspects of other interpretations of Spider-Man, which is what the feature films should be. Mm-hmm. When you watch an animated version, they have to have a specific take because they have to differentiate from all of the past Spider-Man series. We've in this century alone, we've had the ending, we had the Spider-Man, the New Adventures, or the Adventure, whatever was supposed to be taking place in between the quote-unquote Raimi films.
Yeah.
Spectacular Spider-Man, Ultimate Spider-Man, Marvel's Spider-Man, and then Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, which my three-year-old watched when he was a child. But they all have to be so different from each other because you have to sell people on this iteration of Spider-Man. Marvel's Spider-Man was much more involved with the science, which is... Yeah. Spider-Man is a Peter Parker specifically is obviously very scientifically know-how. This is one of the compelling parts about the origin of the character. And all of the press leading into this was like, yeah, we paid attention to the games. You should. The Insomniac Spider-Man duology plus one is incredible. Mm-hmm. You should take from that because they did for Spider-Man what the Arkham games did for Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And this is such a stupid thing to say, but I'm going to say it. This is the most Spider-Man movie we've had.
Yeah.
Because of what they are capable of to do now with the visual effects, leaning into the athleticism and the acrobatic ability of the character to where you really feel that this Spider-Man is in the prime that none of them really have ever been able to go into.
Sure.
Right. And this does feel more than No Way Home. And this is a funny thing to say. This does feel like the celebration of who this character is at his core. Part of that, yes, is sad boy Peter Parker. And that was a criticism that I had that a lot of us have had of Spider-Man, which is him leaning on other characters fundamentally breaks what made Spider-Man the character people loved and gravitated to when he was created in 1964.
Yeah.
Was that he could not rely on others. It was his ingenuity and his ability to improvise in situations that makes him work. And he's not dependent on the characters he interacts with in this movie because he's functioning with his own agency. And that is so important for where this character is going to go. And it's hard to not think about that because we have Spider-Man now in his prime, post-secondary, and moving into his life. And a lot of this movie is dealing with, ironically, the aftermath of No Way Home, but not in a way where I felt like it's leaning into it as a crutch. I think the funniest aspect of the flashbacks, and I will praise Destin Daniel Cretton because everything this guy has touched in the MCU has turned to gold, bringing in his stunt coordinating team. The cinematography in this from Brett Pollack, this is the best a Spider-Man movie has ever looked. He is a red and blue hero who should stand out, who should pop on screen. and not in a way where, funnily enough, I like the comic book covers coming to life. Those are fun. Mm. I wish they were more naturally woven into choreography because they're just the scenes we saw in the trailers,
yeah,
which work as trailer moments, but they are just sort of, they kind of are what we wanted that we didn't get from Fantastic Four, which was seeing a bunch of characters to help build out that world. But this does feel so influenced by the prime of the Insomniac Spider-Man. And for the first time within this version of the character, I'm so much more excited to seeing where it goes than the assumption, and it was obviously apt, which was we were just going to get more. We knew we were going to get more. Spider-Man, outside of one, they get trilogies. And what do you do with those? And they were influenced by real world. The reason No Way Home is what it is because of the success of Into the Spider-Verse. That's the reason it became a real multiverse movie the way that it did, and the pivot point in what the MCU of the multiversal saga would be. But I saw this the first time, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And the reason I saw it a second time was it's very easy when Spider-Man is my second favorite comic book character of all time. I'm basic. I love me Batman. I've read more Batman than I've read of any other character. But second in line to that is Spider-Man. And No Way Home, with more viewings, unfortunately, it gets worse. I like this more the second time because your point is it is focused. It's focused on who is Peter Parker? What is it like for him to be Spider-Man in the aftermath of what he's done? Like, what is he when he's solely focused on being Spider-Man? What does that mean? How does that affect his life? And we will get it more into spoilers. But one of the things that I love so much that clearly to me, this feels like a Kevin Feige note, because we've seen what happens when Sony tries to make their own movies with Spider-Man characters, is this movie gives its perspective on the idea of canon events, but not in a way where it makes a point of pointing it out. And I'll explain more in spoilers, because there are elements of this that feel familiar, but at no point did I go, oh, this is old hat. We've seen this. This movie has a fresh perspective on what is a vitally important part of Spider-Man's growth as a character. And I found that incredibly refreshing. The day we're recording, Wonder Man season 2 has got canceled, which for me only affirms that Destin Daniel Cretton will be directing Spider-Man 5. He's proven to be the guy, unless he doesn't want to be. And yeah, the feeling I had with this, and people don't like talking about DC and Marvel at the same time, every time that I've watched this, I left smiling, just the same way when I watched Superman, I left smiling. Mm. It's just, it's joy, it's fun. The only thing that I'll say that, and I think unless you have more, we can kind of bridge into spoilers, is that I would love to see them do MCU versions of Spider-Man's villains and make them the focus of the antagonism of his universe, because we've leaned very heavily on Stark-related stuff for two of the three. And No Way Home was, hey, remember those versions the first time we did them? We're just going to do those, which I understand, but I would like to see this, which is now, and it's not even an argument because of the length of his career. He's been Spider-Man for 10 years. He will be Spider-Man for at least another 6 if they manage to do, like, Tom Holland might be retiring as Peter Parker by 37, which is not insane. Yeah. And where that will go, most people who know anything about Spider-Man in general will kind of know. This is not a spoiler, but just an awareness of that character and the other Spider-Man that may or may not exist. That I want, this is the definitive Spider-Man, his tenure as the character and his impact on culture. And I'm saying this as a 35-year-old man. Like, I grew up with Tobey Maguire. I was in my angry phase by the time the Andrew Garfields come up, but this is easily the best performance Tom Holland, I almost said Hardy. This is easily the best performance Tom Holland has delivered in an MCU film. And every moment with familiar characters is used so effectively because it's about character. They're not in the movie just because, and that's been an issue in a lot of MCU movies. Punisher is fantastic. He's not watered down. There's just a comfortability between John Bernthal and Tom Holland's back and forth. And this is probably the most realized version of MJ and Ned. Mm-hmm. These writers have grown with these characters they've spent nearly a decade with, because Homecoming was what, 2017? Yeah, 2017. Yeah. And getting that opportunity to see them lean into these characters and flesh out this world, I'm really excited on the Spider-Man part, even though it's in the MCU.
I think something I really enjoy about this movie is it feels like it's the first time Spider-Man's taken very seriously in the MCU. I feel like specifically Homecoming and Far From Home are way too light. Even when they get a little heavy, it's just not enough. I've always kind of described those movies as like, and it's ironic, I guess there is a little bit of this, though I not directly, they feel like the Disney Channel versions of a Spider-Man movie. Like
There's no web swinging.
There's no web swinging. I think the romance is obviously, it's way more like kiddie romance. You know, like when they have their first kiss, it's a little peck, you know? But when you think of like the first kiss in Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, it's this incredibly cinematic, rains pouring down. He just saved the day. It's grand. There's nothing like that in these movies so far. And I think now they're starting to get to that where it's like, oh, we can be like cinematic again. I just don't think that the first three movies had that feeling. In some ways, they just took it too lightly. And you were saying earlier about like he's not relying on anybody in this movie, really. I think that's great because that enhances the relatability. You know, none of us have an Iron Man. Most of us at least don't. I don't have a billionaire with technology who can solve all my problems. Even someone mentioned it recently. They're like, in No Way Home, his identity gets outed and it's a big crisis. How do they fix it? Go live in the billionaire's apartment. What the hell? Like, yep. I think that's just totally busted. And I'm so glad. I don't know who was driving those decisions. I don't know if it was Watts. I don't know if it was the writers. I don't know if it was Feige. I don't know. But whoever figured it out was like, we need to get away from this and get him living in a crappy, like, it's like their storage. It's not even an apartment. It's like a storage room is what he's living out of. And they're like, yeah, nobody comes in here because we just use it for crap. I'm like, awesome. That's sweet. So I think they've done a very good job of, and to like the credit of John Watts at No Way Home, we couldn't have this movie without that ending of kind of resetting everything. So thank God they made that decision to kind of ruin his life because it just made everything so much better. And I really appreciate that they didn't, you know, run from that. They embraced it really heavily because that's where Peter Parker's strengths are as a like a character to experience is watching him be miserable and overcoming that. It's not just because I do like seeing him be sad, but it's because I like seeing how he overcomes, he rises against it all. And one last thing I'll say on kind of like the general subject of this movie is we're talking about it's like one of the best looking Spider-Man movies. The movie has a gray look to it, but it's in line with the themes of the movie. He's in a gloomy part of his life, so everything looks cloudy and it's intentional. And the whole movie doesn't look gray, even though outside it is gray. Like when he's in the apartment at that party, like it's brown, it's like got some color to it, like there's contrast. And then I don't know if it's really a spoiler, I don't think it is, the last shot of the movie is a sunset or a sun rising, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is by design, it's brand new day, you know? And I'm like, that's, I love it. It's great.
It's funny because it's very rare that anything sort of being reactionary works. We have countless examples. You can look under the Disney banner of examples where they reacted to something. Rise of Skywalker. Mm. And it's very rare that that works out.
Yeah.
And one of the greatest decisions that ironically happened because No Way Home came out at the peak of the pandemic, they weren't going to be able to rush a Spider-Man film out after No Way Home. It just wasn't going to happen. You had strikes as well. To briefly mention something I think that's incredibly important because this is a first time for Sony, purely on the creative standpoint, which is the studio up until this movie had the most control.
Yes.
And Tom Holland coming back for what will likely be probably a day trilogy. That's likely what it's going to be. It won't be a brand trilogy or a new trilogy. It'll probably be a day trilogy because they seem to like that now, where as the actor, as I don't think he's listed as a producer. No, he's not. But just as the as Spider-Man, mm-hmm. he can make the decisions. I'm doing the Odyssey. You have to move Brand New Day. Mm-hmm. This is not the actor. Please let me hang on to this role. And that's not to be dismissive of Toby or Andrew, mm-hmm. but Sony needs Tom Holland.
Yeah.
And Tom Holland is in a movie, another movie this year that's probably also going to make $1 billion. Like, he yeah. doesn't need Spider-Man. And his passion and his joy of the character comes through in a way where I saw a tweet, I don't know if you saw it, which was he saw the very first test screening. He's like, this isn't the movie we're trying to make. Mm-hmm. We need to fix it. And that can be a good thing. It can be a bad thing. Sometimes you get the Incredible Hulk. But just everyone in this movie is made the best thing. Like, I love Shang-Chi, but some of that is COVID affected with what you're able to do. And
sure.
Destin Daniel Cretton, he will get a lot of talk, and it's abundantly clear to me that Marvel likes this guy because he goes yeah. on to make Wonder Man, which is one of their best series they've ever made.
He's going
to
do Avengers.
He was going to do Avengers, and I am on the side. I don't actually care that they pivoted from Kang because it didn't work in Ant-Man. You're going to do Doomsday. Kevin himself said it during Comic-Con. The retroactive awareness of Thanos is ridiculous. Guys, he didn't do anything until Infinity War. Stop it. And Destin Daniel Cretton being freed to do this might be the best thing for Marvel because the pre-sales for this were high. And at the end of the day, money does matter to these studios. But where mm-hmm. Spider-Man is now is the brightest spot he's ever been in. I don't care how much money No Way Home made, because the hurdle was going to be Spider-Man 4.
Yes.
We will talk about where it ranks in our favorites. It's easily among the best. That's not a conversation. In live action, I still think the Spider-Verse films are the best thing Spider-Man's ever done, but that's a different art form within the medium. So we've chatted plenty about what we can't talk about with this. There's a lot to talk about because they did and they didn't really hide things from us. So we're going to get into spoilers. So you've been warned. If you like Spider-Man, you're probably going to see this. This probably didn't weigh you anymore. But what will be a fun part of this conversation is so much of this is that superhero movies are dead. And I agree with a lot of what the producers are saying. No, bad superhero movies are dead.
Yeah.
And let's go into spoilers. So we're going to talk about everything. You have been warned.
Oh, see, you stumbled across my board. I'm not one of those weirdos, I swear.
He's a little weird. I'm MJ.
You two don't know each other?
I think the first place we have to start off with is I feel so bad for the people involved with this because the last two Spider-Man movies, they just had to lie for the entire press tours of these movies. And Jean Grey is incredibly important to this story, and it not being revealed until about the midpoint of the movie doesn't really change the movie.
Yeah, it is. No.
So I'm of two minds of this, and this is why I was really glad I saw the film a second time. So here's my initial reaction to this. Listeners are probably thinking, Kyle, are you going to let Cade talk? Yes, I'm going to let Cade talk, listeners. I wouldn't have invited Cade if I didn't want him to talk, which is my first experience watching this movie, and I briefly mentioned it, was, man, that was awesome. I really would have loved, you know, like a Spider-Man villain.
Yeah.
And the second time, Sadie Sink is fantastic in this movie. There's an irony that she is essentially getting to play the Spider-Man version / the X-Men version of 11. I don't know if that would be lost on any Stranger Things fans, sure. But she is easily one of the best talents out of that show series. Mm-hmm. And her connection with Peter and their mirroring of each other throughout this story is a mentor-mentee friendship that, even though I've read a fair amount of X-Men and Spider-Man comics, it is not a prototypical relationship. And this was one of the best indicators for me, seeing Tom Holland progress into that icon who Spider-Man is. The city loves him and his relationship as well with Detective Wolf, which was a great introduction. And it builds out the world in where there's a tangibility. Like, we won't have to spend a ton on this, but the fact that they went to Glasgow, they built real sets. It feels like a lived-in New York and not unfinished sets that they have to background replace. That is the hardest part of watching films at the end of the Infinity Saga, is Spider-Man and some of the others, this, the background replacements don't age very well. It's just people.
It's really bad.
It's people standing in front of voids and seeing inside the mask, I think, was a brilliant choice just to connect audiences. And there's a metaphor in the way that they symbolize who Peter is. We see him saddest at the beginning. We see the anger when he becomes a man spider without the extra arms. I was disappointed we didn't get the extra arms. I really wanted them, being somebody who did grow up with Spider-Man, the animated series. But what this simplicity of the story is, and that's not a criticism, because if you do simple things really well, it can work just as well as something that's overly complicated for the sake of it. Sometimes yeah. Marvel movies have done that. But getting this to be about what it means to be Peter Parker, what it means to be Spider-Man, and what a balance of the two of them are for somebody who is living at the worst phase of his life, and he's just taking his serotonin drugs, watching people live their own lives, and the meaningful nature in which that is a part of the story. I'm glad they spent the entire movie looking at what he gave up, because if it had been magic beans or a princess kisses the frog, it doesn't make the actual ending as rewarding. I know you saw it. I know I saw it when Tom talked about the last frame is what made him most excited. Mm-hmm. And it hits even harder the second time once you know it's coming. So yeah, what I guess let's start off with the antagonist being Jean Grey and sure. Oh no, the guy who hates mutants. But Trammell Tillman was great. He was a very convincing bad guy and he never seemed trustworthy, but everybody in the movie understood their assignment and you feel that throughout the entire picture.
Yeah, I you're completely right. I never believed him to be an ally. I mean, it's damage control. They've yet to do anything that makes me trust them in any movie. So I'm like, yeah, this guy's going to do something shady. I don't know what, but I was like, you probably have. I was like, I don't know what this VMAX is or anything, but I'm sure you have it and you know what it is. But yeah, Jean Grey is one of like the parts that kind of detracts from the movie, because like you said, I kind of wish it was a Spider-Man villain. I think because Jean Grey is a significant character in the larger Marvel universe and this is her introduction, that means we have to spend less time with Peter and his story to then go and experience her story, experience her backstory. And obviously, like, no matter who you have for a villain, you're going to need to spend time on those things. But something about it just felt really distracting. Like, we're pulling away from the Spider-Man movie to see the Jean Grey short film. You know, I was like, I don't know. It's all well integrated into the themes of the story. Every character from like the larger Marvel universe, whether it be Spider-Man, Punisher, Hulk, and Jean Grey, they all are like kind of isolated characters struggling with them, their identities and stuff, and they all have like a moment where they let loose, right?
Except for Yelena Belova, who knows who she is through yes. and through.
Yes.
And I love that character so much. Like, what they've done with her and her progression, where it's like, she could be chilling at the new Avengers Tower. No, she's in a bathhouse.
A spa, yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah.
Cool, why not? So I really like how they link it all together. That's nice, but there's just something about like Jean being such a significant force, not even in terms of power, just like as a presence on the screen, that it takes away from Peter's story. And that just kind of, I don't know, pulled me out of it a little bit, I guess. And again, they could have probably solved that had they not tried to spend so much of the movie in mystery. Because, as you said, it's not really a reveal. Because guess what? Jean Grey doesn't exist in this universe.
Turn my laptop around. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah. A, and of course. But B, it's like, yeah, we guessed that literally the day that it was rumored that she was going to be in this movie, that it was Jean Grey. But also, it's just like, I don't know, like, it's not a reveal, so there's no need to keep it a secret. You could have exposed this information sooner. So I think the movie's 2.5 hours long, and I don't know that it uses all of that time wisely because it's spent chasing a mystery, and I just don't understand it. So that's something they could have, I think, easily done without. But as you said, Sadie Sink herself is fantastic. I really like her, and I'm excited to see where they take her. And I kind of like how they wrap up her story with like the flashback and having her kind of have a mom in a way to talk to. I thought that was really beautifully done.
And it's a good use of Marissa Tomei, who gets absolutely to come back.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so too. I think that was a really effective way to use that character, and also kind of fixes a problem I had retroactively with her character in the previous movies, where she just didn't care that he was Spider-Man. Like, she's like, oh my God, what the fuck? And then you never follow up on that concern ever again, really.
Okay. I have a question for you, though. It's a beautiful sequence. However, because of the, and I do actually like the way that they finally got to with great power comes great responsibility in No Way Home. I think that's a nice moment. And it does sort of confirm my idea that Ben Richards or Ben Parker, not Ben Richards, that's a different
didn't
thing.
Exist.
Ben Parker. No, I think he was a beatnik. Deadbeat. And he just deadbeat and he left.
Yeah,
I
sure.
I think that's what happened. The two actors sell the scene. But, and this has been something that does bother me slightly about McKenna and Summers' dialogue, which is sometimes it's just so obvious that some of the subtlety gets lost, where
sure.
when she's talking to Jean, it reminded me of Martin Sheen not being allowed, for whatever reason, to say with great power comes great responsibility in The Amazing yeah. Spider-Man.
That was awful. Yeah.
Like, he's got to say, like, your father believed that if you have if you could
a
do
moral obligation
things, moral obligation to do them, it what was a responsibility hell? And it's just guys, we know the line, it's only been 10 years, like, it's okay, you're allowed to say it. It is
yeah.
arguably, I mean, it's usually misquoted to some degree, her sort of talking like, you've got great power and you're special, but it's not the thing that makes you special, it's you, and you sure. have responsibility to be you. It's like, guys, yeah. I get what you're saying,
yeah.
This maybe needed, like, I think what is funny is Tom Holland, I'd be very curious, he hasn't talked about this obviously yet, because the movie is not, I mean, it's out as we're recording to the public, but he talked about a scene with Zendaya, and both of them were like, this isn't working. And there's a couple scenes that I think this could be. I don't think it's the scene when Jean takes over. My guess is it's the scene when she has the letter.
Yeah.
That would be my guess, because that seems incredibly important, because we obviously, you made a great point. No Way Home set the stage for nobody remembers Peter Parker. He got his GED. Okay, this is a stupid thing to complain about.
I know
what you're what is he doing for money?
I was thinking, I mean, he buys a ton of flowers. And I'm like, I could get by, you're living in the
and
storage
take out. Unit.
And take out. I'm like, I can totally get past that you have this apartment. Like, they already set up, like, we don't care about this room. So yeah. you could be paying $100 a month. I get that.
He's got the same sort of setup else. As Matt Murdock. I've got the roof. Yeah. So nobody notices yeah. I leave through the roof.
Exactly. So I'm like, you're buying flowers like every day, eating out.
Weekly. Let's give him weekly. Yeah. It's about weekly.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Probably. But I'm like, this is kind of crazy. So no, I don't think you're totally wrong to point that out, because at least in the original movies, like, they established that he works at a pizza place and does stuff with the Bugle.
Show
and
then him, it's like, he's got the Denmars shirt. Show me one shift where yeah. he's working at Denmars.
Or show him DoorDashing. Like,
yeah,
he's Spider-Man.
Yeah, exactly.
He can fucking DoorDash. Like, it would make sense, you know? Like,
yeah, I really love the inclusion of DeWolf, because it gives him somebody to ground him to the actual world. Because he's not interacting with anybody, like, that is, it is, the way I talked about being a canon event, which I think it's a natural progression point for us in our discussion, which is, this has a lot of Spider-Man 2 in it, which is not a problem if you look at, like, the framework and the way that they envelop it, which in this version, yeah. he is mutating further and thus creating issues with his powers. Ironically, also kind of giving him another origin story.
Tom Holland actually said that he's like, I didn't get to do the thing where you figure out your powers thing. And he said, yep. that's one of the ideas he brought. He's like, I kind of want to do that. Like, that sounds fun. And so he just was like, his powers evolve. And then, you know, the writers and director kind of collaborated to figure out what that looked like, which I thought was really interesting.
It's one of those things. I mean, there's a joke with Spider-Man 2 that it's like, it's just erectile dysfunction.
Sure.
Spider-Man yeah. powers. But yeah. the way in which it socially, emotionally affects him physically, like biophysically, in where your powers because of, and this, people have reactions to stress. Your skin breaks out, you like all sorts of real world things. I don't know of any actual spider people, but the way that this feels like, yeah, every Spider-Man is going to go through this. We saw Peter do, or I mean, they're all Peter. We saw Toby go through this, I'd say the most effectively in Spider-Man 2, where it's about that relationship and the repression of those powers and what happens. Some of it is in The Amazing Spider-Man 2. Obviously, this is, that's the least effective version of it. But the fresh take on this is, because I would say this is a canon thing that has to happen, is it's Spider-Man's abilities furthering and what that means in his choice of balance. And again, it's not complicated, but it's effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It, you know what's something I noticed? When you think of the organic webbing from the Raimi movies, it's like tight. It's like very tightly wound. This is like it's just like more...
He hasn't funneled it direct.
Yeah. It's very weird. And I kind of like it. Like, it's like a different... I didn't know we could get like a different kind of, you know, style of webbing at this point. So the fact that they found their own way in on that, even on something that has already happened before, I think was really cool. I liked when he comes out on the rooftop for the first time and it's just gushing out of him. I'm like, it's insane.
Yeah, its pressure has built up and it's just everywhere. Yeah, quite literally. And it's what's so funny about that is it gets to be so referential of just Spider-Man, right? And then he's quite literally going, Web, stop! Web, stop! Yeah. And like, it is a very funny, and it's a sweet moment when he's swinging with MJ and he's just, stop. Like, he's saying it to himself because it's the only way he's...
I was thinking, I'm like, is he gonna like collide with a wall while holding onto her? You know?
But that relationship, it works. Those actors, obviously, they're married in real life.
Yeah.
And it's a cornerstone to the movie. And to your point, which is so correct, this feels like a complicated adult relationship. And I know some fans who are probably critical of the Marvel Universe are going to go, well, this is just, you know, it's a rehash of Guardians. Well, no, that's a very different thing.
Sure.
Because it is a someone taken out of time, right? Yeah. Where the relationship literally didn't exist.
Yeah.
And because of Jean's abilities and what Peter has experienced, the two scenes with the two of them are, I think, the two best scenes in the movie, when he doesn't know that MJ's taken over. And you just see that release of, oh my God, this thing that I've given up is finally back, only for it to be taken away, and seeing the real anger from Tom Holland and the animalistic nature coming out. And then her finding the letter in Punisher's apartment and her just being incredibly real and raw with him, like, that I'm sorry you've lost this, but I didn't. And then I'm curious for you, because here's where I think about it. I think, even though Jean says, you're not in there at all, I think it's a lie, or it's like locked away somewhere that she doesn't find till later. Mm-hmm. Because the only explanation for the
Black Dahlia,
for her to be looking at that on the roof. And then I'm going to finish my thoughts with the ending of the film, and then we can dive into whatever you'd like to talk about, where he says hi to Ned and the handshake just sort of happens organically. He introduces himself as Peter.
Yeah.
And just seeing the joy on Peter's face, it is quite literally, as you said, the sun had risen and it is a brand new day. Peter's reached balance and the people he loves most, outside of May, sorry, she's still dead, they're back. At least one of them is back in his life now.
Yeah. This was the most thing I was nervous about with this movie, because that sacrifice at the end of the movie of No Way Home was so important to me. And I hate movies that undo sacrifice. Deadpool and Wolverine, I'm not huge on the fact they brought back Wolverine, even though it's a different Wolverine. They didn't necessarily undo the sacrifice, but, you know, it's all implied.
They did it the Deadpool way.
I appreciate that they tried, and that's fine. So, like, I give them a bit more of a pass. But this one, I'm like, you got no pass, because they're still alive, and I don't want to... I know that they're married in real life, and so we'll probably never see Tom Holland kissing Gwen Stacy or anything like that, which I think is really lame and dumb, but whatever, I understand. So I just didn't want them to upset this, even full well knowing they will eventually try to bring them all back together. I thought it was handled as well as it could be. And the thing I'm happiest about is they make Peter suffer again, like through this moment, is she says, I don't love you. And that's the hardest thing he could ever hear.
Well, the payoff is at the end of No Way Home, right? Where it's like he wants to say, I love you. She says, say it when we're back together.
Yes.
And
he does.
I understand why they maybe thought they needed the flashback sequences, but every time they did them, I went, oh, this looks awful.
Yeah, it's distracting because of how different those movies look and how flat they are. But yeah, I completely agree. Like, there is a payoff in that it doesn't go the way he wanted to. In his head, he's a romantic guy, and he is not going to get that reciprocated, because if you went back to meet your wife, knowing everything you know about your wife and she knows nothing about you, guess what? I don't know if it works out for you, man. I don't know. Like, because you, it's so one-sided. And
well, she says the best thing about it. She's like, I don't know you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I know who Spider-Man is.
Yeah, but I don't know Peter Parker. And so there can never be anything there. I'm sure one day they'll get back together. Because like you said, they also do a thing. They plant the seed that she doesn't like her boyfriend. Because she talks bad about him.
I don't like that, because my boy Ezra Bridger is in the movie for a scene. Don't make him suck.
Yeah.
Also, I would have appreciated this, and this is something that I am a little annoyed by. Make him someone of consequence. Make him Harry Osborn.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
Do something. That's I love Gwen Stacy. I loved her before the Amazing Spider-Man duology. But I need, like, those characters ASAP. Like, yes. Put them together like they were in the Ultimate Comics, because we do, I think the trio of the three of them are amazing together, but it does, to quote Yelena Belova, it feels like small potatoes. Like, we need make the world, we need the world to feel like moderate potatoes.
Yeah, sure. No, I completely agree, because then it's just Peter and his two friends, and that's all it ever is, and I think that's kind of boring. You know what's funny? When he... The very first scene, he's waiting. It's at the beginning of the movie. He's waiting for the elevator or something, and there's a blonde girl next to him. I thought that was actually Betty Brant from the Homecoming movies, because it looked like her for a second. And I was like, oh, does she have like a crush on him? No, it's just a completely different random girl. But like, again,
no,
that's an
opportunity.
She's
got juicy sweatpants and a black tank top.
Yes.
That's not a comment on her at all. It's quite literally what Tom Holland wears.
Yes. That was very funny. So, but yeah, I'm glad that they are making him work for it. I'm hoping they don't put him back together in the next movie. If they're going to bring them back together, I think it needs to be in the last one. I want this to build up, because even in the last trilogy, they're just together at one point. Like, there's not really a lot of buildup. Like, they both like each other, and they're just awkward about it. Like, it just kind of happens.
It happens
and I never
off
really liked
screen
it.
Because they kiss in Far From Home, and then they're together in No Way Home. Something, and there are elements of Peter Parker's world that, as I loved this movie, I really did. He goes to Empire State University. He's clearly not a student. But in order for this truly to be Peter at his peak, not prime, but peak of what he needs to be, like, he needs a degree in order to, like, start Parker Industries or whatever. Sure. Like, he needs a world around him that's, because they sort of have one, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But it needs to be a world that exists. And I, like, my thing for the remainder is, if I were betting, Miles is in 5, and then Spider-Man 6 is a Miles and Peter movie. Like, that has to be the handoff. You're not doing a 7-8. No one is doing those. That's not happening. Mm. Like, Spider-Man will survive regardless of what the MCU is doing. So I actually think it would be, to your point, if them falling in love again is 2... at least we get to see them fall in love.
Yeah. No, yeah, right? I completely agree. I want that progression. Because like you said, they did a very smart thing with like planting this seed at the end where she's on that rooftop at the school and holding her necklace that he got her.
And she's crying when the mental wave goes away.
Yes, there's something kind of awakening in her, you know?
What's her October, her Winter Soldier code? Because Ned's was the handshake.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they really had a thing besides just, you know, typical romance stuff. But
he's going to sit beside her with a cafeteria plate and go, you guys are weird. And it's all going to unlock.
There will be something, I'm sure. But I guess I'm just glad. And, you know, maybe maybe it just does work out where it's not even a I remember thing. Maybe he just gets her to fall in love again because they're soulmates, you know, and it's just meant to be. But I don't know.
Does Tom Holland, and I wouldn't be mad because it's you brought it up. What if we get a Tom Holland upside down kiss with MJ?
That'd be interesting.
It'd be like it'd be a cyclical nature. I don't know when, like maybe we, I don't know, probably 2029. I feel like that's probably the safest bet for when we get one more day. Or yeah. I don't know what, like I was trying to think of what the heck you another would call day. The next one. Another day. I don't know. I have no idea. It's going to have day in the title. That's what they're going to do. Cause the last one will be final days.
Yeah.
Or something, right.
There's something that just occurred to me too, that I wanted to talk about. I was going to mention it earlier, but I want to bring it up before it slips out of my brain. Did you catch when Peter gets shot at the end of the movie by Punisher?
Yes.
It is a direct mirror to Aunt May's death scene.
Yeah.
It's like the same lines, same kind of framing, mm-hmm. but it's now with Jean. I thought that was a really interesting choice, especially because that's not his movie. You know, that's a completely different director's movie and I guess the same writers, but it was such like a unique thing to do, like that I just didn't expect. And I just was like, oh, wait, hang on. What's going on here? I don't really know what to say about it, but it was just a really interesting creative choice, especially because you're coming out of the scene with Aunt May.
And the de-aged Tom Holland, which they only was let you see.
I'm not crazy, right?
No.
Yeah.
So in the scene when we see it, so I think, I guess we only go into Tom's head twice.
Yeah.
So when we see it the very first time, I, without a doubt in my mind, and the only reason I know this for a fact, and this is a credit to Tom Holland, like, dude works out. Yeah. He gives us the underwear Spider-Man costume in the bathhouse, which was hilarious. And clearly he is in incredible shape. But one thing he's done, and he's talked about this, is like he is thicker. Like he has more muscle mass than when he was a kid, because like putting it on at 19, much harder. So that version of him is like, and because we even in No Way Home, which is 5 years, he's much leaner in that mm-hmm. trilogy than he is now.
Absolutely.
It's de-aged for sure. They thin him out.
I thought he looked a little smooth in the face,
and it's like, quick, like he turns to camera and it cuts. They're not lingering on it
they didn't want to spend too much of that budget on that. Rightfully so. You don't need to really de-age Tom that much, but yes, you're right, that was interesting. But yeah, I just thought that was a interesting creative decision. I don't really have much else to say about it, other than I mean, you didn't think he was gonna die, right? No doubt in your mind.
I've told this story. I don't know if I've done it officially on the podcast, so I guess I will now. One of the worst parts about being us is we're so plugged in. Mm-hmm. And part of me that I think died maybe a long time ago was in 2018 when I was watching No Way Home. Not No Way Home. 2018 was Infinity War. Sorry. Obviously, mm-hmm. Spider-Man's on the brain. When everyone was dusted, I was like, oh, that sucks. But I wasn't sad. Because for one, we knew Far From Home was coming. Yeah. On top of, we knew there was going to be whatever. Like, I mean, the days of not knowing what Endgame's title was going to be, just to me, it's so funny that was the case. But I'm just like, no, I don't know. It would have been so ballsy for them to do it, because Peter Parker does die in some versions of the canon. But it gave me what I love about Spider-Man as a character, which is, what helps separate him from like the X-Men or the Fantastic Four or the Avengers is like everyone sort of has an inkling that he's just a dude. And like they love, like he's a New Yorker, right? Like as much as it was on the nose in Spider-Man 1, like you mess with one of us, like that's New York.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
Like, even like, I don't mean to get political, but even more so now, like look what's going on with like who got elected as mayor and everything. Like, the way that city, which is one of the most iconic cities in like just the world in general, and I say that as a Canadian, like it's hard to ignore, but the fact that he had like Spider-Man might have been vaguely aware in the trilogy, because again, like he wasn't really solving crimes in Greater Manhattan in his movies. He was messing around at the Washington Monument. I will say what I loved was the all Spider-Man Marvel Studios thing. And him disappearing from the memories.
Like, oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah. So every time they show, like, I think the first one is Ned sitting in the cafeteria and Peter like phases away.
Then
I love that idea. Like, we see spell ring go out and then he disappears.
Yeah, I did notice that. Okay.
Which was very, very cool.
Interesting.
But he's been like pounding the pavement, right? Like, he builds that relationship with DeWolf. He gets the key to the city that spoiled the ending of Born Again season 2 before it was even out. Thankfully I had already seen the show by the time that trailer came out, but I wouldn't say I have as many issues with Jean. I think it is just sort of like, she's great in it. Part of me just wishes it was a Spider-Man villain. I will say something that did bother me a little was, if you're going to, and this is clearly coming from Kevin, if you're going in like, hey, we're going to introduce one of our main freaking X-Men in a Spider-Man movie. Yeah. I want her getting off the bus to Charles's gifted school. Like,
that's where it seemed like it was going, though.
Oh, it's upstate New York.
It's upstate New York, yeah.
But I want it heavy. If you're going to do it, make it heavy-handed. Like, well, I don't know. I thought one thing that I haven't talked about that I thought you brought up, which is the MCU-ness of this is not in your face in the way in which I would say the other ones have done it, where you knew No Way Home was going to be like a two-hander with Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Iron Man was obviously the main focus of Homecoming, but where Hulk is in the story is the most interesting performance we've had from Mark Ruffalo, maybe since Age of Ultron, because the lean into comedy, I think, was way too much of a crutch. I respect how entertaining Ragnarok is, but it got too far. Like, the comedy of what they did in Infinity War didn't work with me. I think the drama of Hulk not wanting to come out is compelling, because I was putting together a list of all of Spider-Man's appearances, which by the time you hear this will be out already, but it comes out tomorrow, a summary of Spider-Man's appearances in the MCU, and the Hulk one was last week. But watching Infinity War, I like that stuff until it's a joke. Like, him running in Hulkbuster armor and falling, like, that didn't work for me. But getting to see somebody who's lived with the trauma, and on top of that, this is a Bruce Banner who's also now dealing with what he did to his cousin, right, in turning her into She-Hulk, which we haven't seen from him since. So I liked Mark Ruffalo getting to dive into that. We did talk about Punisher, it was great, and Yelena was awesome. Like, through and through, this feels like this is the essay on what the thesis statements were of the previous films, where this is the finished product. Like, the edges, I would say, are actually present in a way where they felt like they were kind of sanded off in the previous trilogy. And if these creatives, like Destin Daniel Cretton and the same writers, want to keep moving forward, I hope that they do. And the fact that Tom has an idea of what he wants to do, that's a good thing, because the worst thing for these movies, and we've seen it, and Kevin's words himself at Comic-Con were, quantity over quality and do the opposite. I was wrong in my earlier statement. Don't make it every 2 years. Take 3 years to make another really great movie, because they have achieved, and this is sounding hyperbolic, I couldn't tell you a franchise where the fourth one is the best one.
No,
that's unheard of. Like, Toy Story 4 is really great. It might be the worst Toy Story, but all those films are 9 out of 10s.
Yeah.
But this unequivocally is the best Holland Spider-Man movie.
I was surprised we never followed up with what came of him after his Hulk out.
He got arrested, or he went into an ambulance, just like the security guy, and they go away.
Yeah, I was like, so, like, is he in trouble? Like, I don't. How does this? Is everyone kind of like on the same page? Like, it's not he's our guy. Like, we.
Well, the Sokovia Accords like mattered, and then they didn't. Like, that was.
Yeah.
So they're, I'm like, gone. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, is he just, like, off the hook, and they're like, don't do it again. Like, figure it out. Get it together.
Well, this is also a Jean thing, which, like, they go out of her way that we don't see her kill anyone, right?
Sure.
A bomb goes off, and guys get shot, because you can't have Jean Grey killing people, or be responsible for killing people, right?
Yeah.
So they have to ride that line. I don't know. Maybe, I mean, he's not on the cast list, so maybe he's in prison. Maybe he's in the raft for Doomsday. Maybe. Don't know.
It's just so odd that they like are just like, all right, he's going to go away now, and that's it. But I really, to your point, I really like the Hulk, and I thought this is probably some of the most interesting stuff, even though he's not in it for very long. Like, I thought it was the most interesting Mark Ruffalo has been, because kind of like Spider-Man, I think they made a mockery out of him for a while, where it's like, now he's Smart Hulk. Isn't that fun? And I'm like, not really.
No, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde is why people like that guy.
Yeah.
He's a reinterpretation of a classic archetype.
I think in this movie, they've emphasized, at least the people who directly worked on this movie, like, you can take these characters seriously and still have fun with it. And that is great. And you can have serious moments where you don't undercut it. Like, imagine if when he's swinging home after he sees MJ kiss that guy, imagine if he like slammed into a wall and was like, ha ha ha. Like, that would suck. They let you stew in that. And then he goes home and he passes out. There's not a joke for like 10 minutes. And I'm like, yeah, this sucks. And it's miserable.
He falls in his underwear and it's funny later.
That's it. It's exactly it. You've had your time to sit in it, and they build back your emotion back up to a point where you're ready for a laugh. And that's the difference. And so I feel like they took these characters seriously and allowed them to be have funny moments that don't undercut.
Same thing with
Punisher,
right? Yes, like, completely. He's not making jokes. That guy should be terrified of fighting the Hulk.
Yeah.
Like, he should be.
It's I loved everything they did with him. They didn't make Punisher the butt of a joke. Like, he gets his laughs in, but it's not at like his expense.
Because that's all he can say.
I'm surprised they didn't sneak an F word in there, because you're allowed an F bomb in a PG-13 movie, but they were like,
there's like stupid rules with Spider-Man. Like, you can find them on the internet where it's like, he's not allowed to have sex. I don't think
or
he's
underage
allowed...
drink, which I thought was interesting, because he does drink in this movie, but he would have been over 21 at this point.
I think he's got at least 22, right? Like, if he, if they,
it's been 4 years since they graduated, so or five years even.
I guess the last thing,
which
Spider-Man do you think is off of Earth? Because I think it's Tobey Maguire on Battleworld.
Oh, you're talking about the beeper at the end?
Yeah,
I thought that was a Spider-Verse tease. But because I thought it did a little glitch effect. And so I thought maybe they're teasing, the movie's called Beyond the Spider-Verse. So I've been thinking for a while that they're going to do some weird live action thing.
The live action people have to be in Beyond.
They have to be. So that's my,
not an old footage. They have to be in it.
That's my belief, is that they're going to do something there. So I think that's what that is. Because I also was like, there's two options. It's Spider-Verse or it's Battleworld. But I'm like, Battleworld still seems like it's far off. And it just feels like that's so like such a vague tease that like,
it could be
I don't know how to connect to that. Yeah. So like, I'm like, I don't know. And maybe that was the point. They're like, we're not going to commit to this.
Yep. Nope.
Because it was weird to me that there wasn't like a bigger post-credits scene. It was just beep, beep, beep. And I'm like, okay, we'll just read into this however we want. Yeah, I don't know.
I've said this more than once. I am still in shock that this is how we're talking about the fourth Spider-Man film in a series of Spider-Man films. It is a true testament to, I guess, doing your homework, making three other Spider-Man films and finally getting to number four. That will do it for our discussion on all the Spider-Man things.
Can I ask you a question? Just one?
There's something of a need to ask you.
I ask the questions, you answer the questions.
Why do you ask questions to which you already know the answers?
Did that count as a question?
Yes.
Damn it.
Last week's question of the week was, what is your favorite live-action Spider-Man film? Scotty Cameron says, I would say my personal favorite Spider-Man film in live-action is No Way Home, because it's a respectful tribute and a swan song for the previous iterations of Spider-Man, and even has a Venom cameo. The best quality film would be Spider-Man 2, because it improves on everything Spider-Man did well. The first Amazing Spider-Man and Homecoming are up there, but Amazing Spider-Man 2 and Spider-Man 3 were deadbeat for worst until the Spum movies. Thank you, Scotty. No, Kyle has not asked this question. Legacy says, I watched this in IMAX, he's talking about the Odyssey, not in the 70mm, and this movie was well worth the price of the ticket. The sound design on those speakers alone sold it, let alone the grand scale. That being said, my bar for adaptations of The Odyssey was Epic the Musical, and it's pretty impossible to top that. So it's nice to have a second favorite version of The Odyssey. And then Dylan says, D-Wade is a good comp. My favorite live-action Spider-Man film in theaters was probably No Way Home. An electric experience, LOL. But overall, I think it's the original Sam Raimi. I find myself quoting Defoe's Green Goblin all the time and just love it. I can also say that Andrew Garfield is very good as an actor, and his Spider-Man films are maybe the worst. Yeah, I think that's fair, Dylan. Thank you to everybody who submitted their answers for the question of the week. Cade, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast. You do all sorts of different things on the internet. You're a YouTube sensation, but tell the people where they can find you.
Yeah, everything is just my name, pretty much. So Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, I don't know, other places is just Cade Onder, CadeOnder. And I also write stuff over on IGN. Most of my stuff is video game based, but on YouTube, I make like video game documentaries. I interview developers and we go deep dives into all kinds of topics. So
Cade's Call of Duty documentary is fantastic. If you're getting excited about what was going on with like the movie and stuff happening, it's about Modern Warfare 3. It is nearly 2 hours long. Highly recommend checking it out. So you can find Cade there. Thank you so much for coming back on the podcast. This has been such a fun conversation, and yeah, just to get to be a celebration of one of pop culture's favorite characters. Thank you, Cade.
Yeah, no, thank you. I love Spider-Man. I love gushing about Spider-Man. So it's always fun to talk shop with someone who knows ball, you know?
Well, and it would have sucked if the movie was bad. If you're watching this on YouTube, please like and subscribe. It helps the podcast get into the algorithm and get seen by more people. If you're on your favorite podcast platform and you can give it 5 stars, why not? Was this not a 5-star review? If it wasn't, you can let me know. Next week's episode, I have to look this up because I am very busy. There may be 2 episodes of the podcast this week. There may not be. If you're not following on your favorite podcast platform, you won't know. That's right. Next week's episode is going to be of House of the Dragon Season 3, which is the inspiration for the question of the week. Who is your least favorite Game of Thrones character? To let me know, you can email the podcast, filmrealistpod@gmail.com. You can also at filmrealist on any of the social medias. Just make sure to include the hashtag QOTW. If you like trailer reactions, follow me on whichever. Quite frankly, I think Instagram is probably the best one because it lets me post the full 3-minute reaction should I want to. But there's a lot of incredible TV stuff coming out in August. We've got House of the Dragon, Lanterns, Star Trek, Strange New World, Season 4 is back. So there's a lot that I'm really looking forward to talking about, and just in genre and franchises being at their best right now. It's fun to talk about, so you're not going to want to miss it on the Film Realists. My name is Kyle Naranja, and I will see you next time.